Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. We are live in Los Angeles, and this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Danny Cannell this hour, Dan Fouts last, next hour. Great to have you in. It's Tuesday. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am good. I got home yesterday. Worked out, went to the grocery store, and I watched Yellowstone. I watched a big TV day yesterday. You know, wife's not around right now for a few days. So I just sat and watched television all night long. I never do that. There's no sports. So I watched NASCAR, then I watched Yellowstone. It was a great TV night. By myself, eating cereal, watching television. It was great.
What's your cereal?
Oh, I buy all this granny crap that's supposed to be good for you.
Really?
Yeah, nothing fun. It's just all nonsense. I buy a different one every week.
I don't believe in healthy cereal. Come on. You gotta get the sugary stuff.
My mom made me eat Raisin Bran. My late mother was really into that whole bran, Raisin Bran thing. So I was in the bathroom every 15 minutes as a kid, but I guess I was healthy.
Yeah.
So there you go. Speaking of healthy, a franchise. Let's start with this, the Dallas Cowboys. So the Cowboys are apparently stunned that Dak Prescott doesn't want a 5-year contract. Dak Prescott wants a 4-year contract. Truth is, he'd rather have a 3-year contract. So in life, this is basically how it works in business, sports, everything. Doesn't matter what business you're in. You can be in tech. You can be in Wall Street. The more talented you are, the shorter contract you want, because that allows you to hit the market again so people can bid on you. The NFL is obviously different because unlike a tech guy or a Wall Street woman, you get tackled in football. So it depends on your health. If you're sturdy, Dak, Russell Wilson, by all means, take a shorter contract, hit the market. If you've had a few injuries, Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Jimmy Garoppolo, I would argue take the extra year of guaranteed salary. But let's talk Dak right here. Dak, if nothing else, is sturdy. He didn't get hurt in college. He doesn't get hurt in the NFL. He gets banged around. He's good. My question is, so I get Dak wanting fewer years. Dak right now is like, I'll take fewer years. I want to hit the market again. And I've said this for years and years about quarterbacks in the NFL. It's brutal. They get trapped. LeBron never gets trapped. Anthony Davis doesn't get trapped. NFL quarterbacks get trapped. My question is, why would the Dallas Cowboys want 5 years? And that's nothing against Dak, but let me throw out a scenario to you. And I think about this all the time. Anytime I've gotten into a business, the one thing I'm always concerned about is getting trapped in a bad business. Do I have an escape clause? Can I get out of it? So I'm going to set up a scenario for Dallas. Maybe it's a worst case scenario, but it's not meteor hitting the earth. Three things, let's say they happen over the next 3 or 4 years. Number one, Carson Wentz remains really, really, really good. I'd say that's like 95%. Number two is Daniel Jones, good rookie year, just keeps getting better. You got yourself a real quarterback. And then Dwayne Haskins doesn't work, and Washington's bad, and they get a really good quarterback next year in the draft, of which we think there are minimum 2, potentially 3 to 4 great quarterbacks. Uh-oh. So Philadelphia'd have a first-round quarterback, and New York's have a first-round quarterback, and Washington would have a first-round quarterback, and I got a fourth-round quarterback, and I potentially have the fourth most talented quarterback in the division. That's called being trapped. Let me read to you how the fourth best quarterback in a division did last year. Cincinnati last, Jacksonville last, Chargers, Philip was bad last year, last, Detroit, Stafford got hurt, last, Arizona, last, Carolina, Kyle Allen most of the year, last. That's what happens when you have the fourth best quarterback in a division. This is not a shot at Dak. I understand he's durable, and he thinks, hey, I want to hit the market. My question with Dallas is, there's a very real scenario that Wentz is already better, maintains that. Daniel Jones looked pretty darn good to me and keeps getting better. And Washington is bad and gets one of the top quarterbacks. There's very few teams this year in the NFL I think have a chance to be really bad. Cincinnati, New York Giants could be, you got to wait and see if Joe Judge can coach. And Washington, if the Dwayne Haskins thing goes sideways, those could potentially be 5-11, 4-12 teams. I'll wait on Arizona. I think they have a little bit of a life offensively. So to me, I don't understand Dallas wanting to get locked in for 5 years. The other thing is college football now, and this has been like a 4 to 5 year like trend, is giving us unbelievable college quarterbacks. Like unbelievable college quarterbacks. There's never been a conveyor belt of talented 21-year-old guys coming out of the league. Do you want to get into a relationship where you have with a guy that is kind of Kirk Cousins? So I get Dak wanting a shorter contract. I do not get the Dallas Cowboys demanding a longer contract. Let me shift to this. One of the things you are noticing in America, and we talked about this, I think Joy and I talked about this multiple times. For the next 10 years and beyond, it's a bad place for rigid people. It's just bad. You got to be willing to change. And America's changing fast. I'll give you an example. 12 years ago, Barack Obama was running for president, and he was going up against Hillary Clinton. Remember that? Now, those are liberals. Those are liberals, those crazy liberal people. They were both against gay marriage and the legalization of pot as liberals. Today, you look at that and think, my God, you could not be a Democrat and run and be either one of those. That's how America's changed in 12 years. Pivoting, being able to pivot. And I've said, I'm not into this. Go back to Twitter. This guy said something 9 years ago. If you're demanding growth, don't demand perfection. People make mistakes. Was Obama today, if you had that approach on gay marriage, a lot of people would just call anybody that said that a bigot. I don't think he's that. Look at his resume. Look at his life. People change. We can't demand growth and perfection, life perfection. But yesterday, NASCAR, which over the last 15, 20 years has gotten old, stale, rigid. And I got to be honest, as a West Coast guy, it feels intolerant to me. You got to give them credit. They have pivoted fast. Yesterday may have been the greatest day NASCAR has had in over a decade. If you did not watch pre-race, Bubba Wallace supported, standing with Bubba, all the racers. It was incredible. Emotional. Jimmy Johnson, one of the all-time greats, apparently after the noose was found in the garage of Bubba Watson, sent a text and emailed everybody. I'm going to stand next to him at the anthem. Everybody signed up. The race itself, Bubba led for a while, was really good, and the ending was nuts. That is how you pivot. NASCAR's been old and regional. The Confederate flag. It's just been, and by the way, the audience now is like 60 years old, is like the medium viewer. It's not good for advertising. It's not good for where we're going. But yesterday, the pre-race, the race, the finish. Yesterday, NASCAR, honestly, felt more like Nike than car racing. That's how you pivot. Now, we could sit here. I could sit here in front of the microphone and go, yeah, but just last week you were into the Confederate flag and you've shown intolerance. If you're asking for growth, let's not demand historic perfection. NASCAR grew yesterday. It was cool. It felt young. It felt tolerant. It felt exciting. Here was Bubba after.
The sport is changing. The deal that happened yesterday, sorry I'm not wearing my mask, but I wanted to show whoever it was that you're not going to take away my smile, and I'm going to keep on going. All in all, we won today. The pre-race deal was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to witness in my life. From all the supporters, from drivers, from crew members, everybody here, the badass fan base, thank you guys for coming out here. This is truly incredible, and I'm proud to be a part of this sport.
It was just great. By the way, for the people who threaten to boycott Nike for Kaepernick, the 10% that leave, if it's that. Bye. For the 10-15% NASCAR, Confederate flag, I'm out. Bye. If the NFL ratings dip because players put a knee, bye. Then it's up to the leagues, Nike, NASCAR, NFL, and the companies aligned with them to market and seek younger people. I mean, they always say, I remember growing up with a guy, Jack Welch, I think was his name. He was a legendary CEO. He ran NBC for years, and he said, you know, you got to fire 5% of your company every year. And people thought, ooh, maybe you'd have to fire 5% of your fans every year. Maybe that's where we're at. But I thought yesterday was a great, great American business story. How to pivot to the new world. And by the way, it's all good. It's all fun. I don't even have sports and I love my job. I've had to pivot in the last 4 months, be a sports talk show host with no sports. It's all good. We're getting through it. Joy and I fist bump every day. Another show. Cross our fingers, a league comes back. Good day for NASCAR. Great pivot.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Jamal Adams is this all-world safety for the New York Jets, and now he's really stepped it up. He wants out. He's demanding a trade. Yesterday, he's on social media, and it was not a subtle message to co-safety Marcus May, who's very good, not as good as Adams, but very good. He said, brother, just keep being you. Show the world you're the best free safety in the game. You deserve everything coming your way. I'm going to miss balling with you most. Believe that. All right. So, and by the way, Ian Rappaport reports today that Jamal Adams has a list of 8 teams he wants to play for. He would not demand an extension with those teams. So what is he telling you? He just wants to play for a winner. This is now Jalen Ramsey of the Jags. It's the same situation. Think about Jalen Ramsey and think about Jamal Adams. Both great Southern football stars. 5-star Southern football college guys. Both great defensive backs. Both high draft picks. Both were immediately great in the NFL. Both are huge personalities. And they're both stars. I mean, they feel, look, sound like stars. And the Jags and the Jets have a lot in common. Offenses that never get it right. Bad O-lines. Very little firepower. Anytime you have success, it's brief. Constantly picking high in the draft. Both always kind of trying to find the next quarterback and think the guy they have is the guy. Jalen Ramsey and Jamal Adams. It's the same guy. It's the same situation. Jalen Ramsey was like, it's not about the money. I just want to play for a winner. I'm a winner, and that's what Jamal Adams is saying. I'm a winner, have been my whole life. One big in high school, one big in college. Not interested in this mess. And what makes it difficult for Joe Douglas, the young and smart general manager of the Jets, I really think he's bright. Here's the problem. He not only has to figure out the money thing with Jamal Adams, he's got to convince Jamal Adams, hey, we are winners. Okay, well, Belichick's the best football coach in America. He's still in the division. Buffalo is a playoff team. I think they got better during the draft than Stephon Diggs. They're absolutely better than the Jets. And I like what I see in Miami. Jamal Adams isn't dumb. He plays those teams twice a year. They get crushed every time they play the Patriots. He sees what Buffalo is doing as a playoff team. The Josh Allen thing's working. He sees Miami and what they did down the stretch 5-4. So Joe Douglas has to convince him the money thing and, hey, we're winners. You know, when I got out of college, when Joy gets out of college, we get to choose where we go. Athletes don't. And increasingly with social media, winning players don't want to hang around losers.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, it looks like we'll have a baseball season. Baseball has targeted the owners and the commissioners a 60-game season that will start around July 24th, a week before the NBA. So as of this morning, it looks like we'll have soccer MLS July 8th, we'll have baseball July 24th, we'll have the NBA July 30th. So here's what worries me about all the sports, but specifically baseball. Players are going to get COVID. I'm comfortable having a league with young athletes getting COVID. I am. I've looked at all the data. Therapeutics, better than they've been. Everybody will get tested frequently. 0 to 28-year-old professional athletes are the single safest group. Baseball is going to manage this. It's just like how we manage every crisis in America. We don't solve mental health. 47,000 Americans commit suicide annually. We don't solve it. We manage it the best we can. How will baseball manage it? Will there be media panic every time somebody gets COVID? You cannot have baseball without contact. It's ridiculous. I mean, even when they deliver a pizza to my door through DoorDash, somebody grabbed a bag, something got touched, but we've discovered that's not really how you get COVID-19. So my first question, my first concern is, players are going to get, in these separate cities, contact. They're going to get COVID. How do we deal with that? I am comfortable with professional leagues and college athletes getting it and getting through it. Most are asymptomatic statistically. So I'm not sure how media is going to be. And the media dictates a lot of what these leagues do. They don't want to get bad press. This, you know, tyranny of the mob. How can you do this to athletes? That's my first concern. Here's the upside for baseball. I've always said, I wrote this in the books I've written, baseball's problem is not length of game. College football and NFL football, the games are longer than they've ever been. The ratings are up. The problem in Major League Baseball is not television ratings. It doesn't matter. These networks are desperate for sports. It doesn't matter if your ratings are up or down. You're going to get paid by somebody. Hockey gets paid a lot. Hockey's ratings have been irrelevant forever. Hockey still gets paid. They get paid in Canada. They get paid by our networks. Hell, NBC buys the English Premier League. We'll buy anything. Urgency is back in baseball. This is the best part of it. What hurts baseball is there's 162 games. Nothing matters until the fall. We are going to get, for the first time in my life, and certainly the first time in this phone era where we get everything urgently, you're going to see a three-game series over the weekend at Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, and it's going to matter. Like, who wins? They split the first two games. Who wins Sunday? 60 games means you go on a five-game losing streak, you're in trouble. You go on a seven-game losing streak, season's over. That's never mattered before. So I think the thing I worry about is how is the media, which I don't really trust on their coverage of COVID-19, to handle it when players get COVID? They're 24-year-old shortstops in the best shape of anybody in his age group. We have all sorts of therapeutics. The testing's better. You have medical professionals. I'm comfortable with this happening because I know it's going to happen and we manage it. I've said from the very beginning with COVID, it's just another health crisis. I'm 55. I've seen a zillion of them in my life. You just deal with it. I mean, good God, we had last year, we had 500 kids die of the flu last year in America. 550 kids, 0 to 17. Los Angeles has 40 million people. We've had nobody die of COVID. I feel, looking at all the data points and the metrics on this, I feel comfortable having a baseball league with some guys getting COVID. I do. And the second thing, though, I think it's great for baseball. The urgency is back. You will literally have to watch every game if you're really a baseball fan. Like, every game's going to matter. 60 games is 20% less than the NBA. So I'm excited for it. I think July is going to be great. I probably should have taken more vacation time in June, but I think we're here. I think we're ready to go.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I think, you know, people know I like college football, right? I'm more of an NFL guy than a college guy because I think the college game's gotten kind of regional. But Alabama and Ohio State announced last week late, they were going to play. And this is really important because in terms of, let's just talk about teams that can win the national championship. There's really only two tiers in college football. And I leave out a lot of really good programs, Wisconsin, Washington, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Nebraska, Iowa. I think 2020 going on, they're not national championship programs. There's four programs in America that are just different. Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and SC, and let me explain. Forget the fact that all have won national titles with three different head coaches. But if every college football program in America had their best coach ever, these four would dominate the sport. It doesn't matter who coaches LSU and Georgia. If Alabama's got Saban, they dominate the conference. It doesn't matter who coaches Texas. Mack Brown was at Texas for a long time, 15 years. You know how many times he won the Big 12? Twice. Bob Stoops won it 10 times. Oklahoma's the better football program. If Oklahoma's got their best coach ever and Texas has theirs, Oklahoma wins the conference. Doesn't matter who's coaching Michigan. If Ohio State's got an Urban Meyer or a Woody Hayes, they win the conference. They dominate the conference going forward. They're just more of a recruiting power. Same with USC. They've been down for like 8 years. If USC's got their best coaches ever, John McKay or Pete Carroll, doesn't matter how good Oregon or Washington or UCLA are, they dominate the conference. There's only four of those. That's it. And now two are playing. There's 12 other programs that are clearly, in my opinion, capable of winning the national championship if they get the right coach, the right quarterback. Clemson, Florida State, Miami from the ACC. Auburn, Florida, Georgia, LSU from the SEC. Michigan, Penn State, Big Ten, Texas, Big 12. Notre Dame's independent, and Oregon. And let me explain that. Now, Oregon is really a story about Phil Knight 20 years ago deciding I'm going to make it a national program. Uniform, stadium, facilities. Oregon's got the best facilities in the western states. They're a national program. They recruit LA. They recruit Texas. They can recruit Utah. They recruit South. Oregon can win a national championship. They got into the game a few years ago. Now, these 12, if the previous four, Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, USC, have their guy, the best coach in the history of the program, those teams aren't winning national titles because they got to get through those four. But these are all capable of it. Now, people say, what about Clemson? What about Clemson? No. Slow down, Clemson. Clemson's in a conference with Florida State and Miami. If Florida State had Bobby Bowden in his prime right now and Miami had Jimmy Johnson in his prime against Dabo Sweeney, Clemson's not making the playoff, brother. They're not getting through those guys. Because Florida State and Miami, especially Dade Broward County, had way better players that went into the NFL and were stars. Right now, Clemson's beating up on a dreadful ACC where the two other powers are terrible. That doesn't mean Clemson's not a good program, but Clemson, the last 5 years, has finished top five in the AP poll. If you take away the last 5 years, the only other time they did it was in 1981. This is like recency bias. Clemson is rolling now. They're going to roll again this year. I think they'll be very, very good for the foreseeable future. But if Florida State and Miami got their act together, those are better all-time programs. Hate to break it to you. So there's only 16 teams to me, and I've left out some really good programs. TCU's a great program. Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa, Utah, Stanford, Washington, South Carolina, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech. I'm not saying they're not good programs. Boise State, BYU. I'm not denying that. But I am saying there's the big four that if they have their best coach ever, they dominate the sport. And I've seen it my entire life. I'm not some 28-year-old blogger. I've been watching this thing for 40 years. And then there's 12 beneath them. Again, now people can argue, the big argument people have is Clemson. That's just recency bias. The other argument is, well, Notre Dame's won three national titles with three different coaches. The world's changed from their academic difficulty to their remoteness to the fact that I don't count programs that won a lot of their national championships when people took trains to games. As Miami, they've won four national titles with four different coaches. But as Joy can tell you, it's a totally transitional program. Like, coaches take the job, want to win, and get the hell out and go to the NFL. It has no fan base. Remember years ago when they played Nebraska in the Rose Bowl and nine people showed up for Miami and 108,000 showed up for Nebraska? It's not a traditional program. It's a vagabond program. It's transitional. It's fun. It's wild. I miss the Miami Hurricanes. But it's the four big dogs, the 12 under them, and the good news now is two of the big dogs, Ohio State and Bama, are playing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
If you look at organizations like the Chicago Bulls, it's an average franchise. Michael Jordan comes in, makes it great, and we think that the Bulls are winners. No, Michael was a winner. You take out Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson, the Bulls are a below 500 franchise. That's what they are. That's what I grew up with. You take the New England Patriots, pre-Tom Brady. In the history of the franchise, they'd only won double-digit games 8 times. It was a mediocre franchise. Nobody cared about New England. Bad uniforms, cold, bad stadium. Even in the Northeast, the Steelers were better. The Eagles were more relevant. The Giants were better. They weren't even that interesting. Washington, for years with Joe Gibbs, way better. Nobody cared about New England. So I don't buy into this thing that, like, Jordan leaves the Bulls and everybody goes, man, they're so dysfunctional. No, they're not. The Bulls are what they always were, pre-Jordan and post-Jordan. It's the same team. Mess. New England, post-Tom Brady, never going to be the same. So when you hear a lot of this, I cannot wait to prove we did not need Tom Brady. Eye roll. Julian Edelman is all kinds of pumped up to prove the Patriot doubters wrong. According to reports, direct quote, he hates excuses. He's not just a product of Brady. Okay, I would like to deliver some facts here. Julian Edelman has never made a Pro Bowl. He led the NFL in drops last year. 3 seasons total in his career where he didn't miss games to injuries. And he has 36 career touchdowns. Randy Moss had over half that in 1 year with Brady. Julian Edelman is not even Wes Welker. Wes Welker was a Pro Bowler 5 times, All-Pro once, 5,000-yard seasons. And outside of 1 year, 1 year in New England, he got hurt. That's about it. New England, you got to get used to something. You're the Bulls. You're the Bulls pre-Jordan and the Bulls post-Jordan. Yeah. That's what New England is. Bill Belichick didn't win in Cleveland. He wasn't winning in New England. Brady is the franchise. Jordan is the franchise. Now, there are franchises that's not true. The Lakers were good before Kobe and Shaq. Hell, they were good before Magic Johnson. I mean, the Boston Celtics were good before Larry Bird. Oklahoma football was good before Lincoln Riley. Okay, Kentucky basketball, Kansas basketball, they've got a lot of winners. North Carolina basketball, they got a lot of winning coaches. The Bulls are Jordan and dysfunction. New England losing and Brady. Julian Edelman, out to prove critics wrong, irrelevant. Simply, his legacy, frankly, is Brady and pretty good Super Bowls. And that's it. He was good in Super Bowls, good postseason receiver, and Brady. But they're not getting to the postseason this year.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
NFL season, we got a bunch of different stories today. Player empowerment is happening. It's happening over all sports. And the reality is players now make $35 million a year. And so, you know, if you're a GM, if you're an owner, you got to get comfortable with it. You know, players are pushing back in baseball. This is just what's happening now. There's so much money in sports. There's more demands of the players' time. They have more power than ever. So the reality is guys like Dak Prescott, I want a shorter contract. I want to hit the market. Let's bring in Stanford Rout, 8 NFL seasons via the Cowher Global Satellite Network. So let's start with Jamal Adams, Stanford. Jamal's like, I want to trade. I want out of here. And a lot of people can say, whoa, 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 but we saw Jalen Ramsey do it. We got Jamal Adams doing it. Is this the reality of what players are now? If I'm a winner and you're a losing franchise, I'm not sitting around having you ruin my career.
Yeah, if you'd asked me this question about 4 or 5 years ago, I would have told you no way, no how, because that just was not the complexity of the league at the time. But now, when you see what Jalen Ramsey did last year, when you see what Micah Fitzpatrick did, getting out of Miami, going to Pittsburgh, having a Pro Bowl season, that's the new norm in today's NFL is players now have a bigger platform. They have a bigger voice. So they're going to make sure that they actually are the architect and the author of their story. If they are on a losing team and they get drafted high in the first round when they come out, they're going to make sure that they go to a team that is winning, that is committed to winning, and a team that is not anemic to it like you see teams like the Jets or the Dolphins or the Browns.
And similarly with Dak Prescott. Dak says, I want 4 years, Cowboys 5. To you, is that more of player empowerment?
I remember back in 2009, a former teammate of mine actually started that trend with Nnamdi Asamoah signing that 3-year contract for a large sum. And I noticed that a lot of players started to take note then. So when you look at Dak Prescott, he's looking at Jared Goff. He's looking at Carson Wentz, 2 players that were drafted number 1, number 2 overall in his draft class. So he just simply wants to make sure that he's paid, he's compensated the same level that they are. And also because Dak already being towards his late 20s, he wants to make sure that he can hit the market again in his early 30s, because the growing sentiment right now in the NFL is that quarterbacks do not hit their prime until they are 30 plus. So he wants to make sure that he's able to cash in at that same time, because the salary cap is just growing. And just the marketing is growing for all of these players, especially the quarterback position. Who knows what the salary or just the economy of the position is going to be in about 4 or 5 years. So Dak, I'm definitely all for him because he just simply is following the trend that the Aaron Rodgers, the Russell Wilsons of the world have already started.
I've been critical of Cam Newton through the years. I think he's been a better celebrity than a quarterback. I think he's had one great year. He's never had back-to-back winning seasons, which is pretty remarkable for somebody that's considered an elite quarterback, which is why I don't consider him elite quarterback. I think he's B-minus, C-plus, and I think at times he's distracted. But I do think with COVID-19, with shortened camps, we're going to have quarterbacks get, you know, COVID-19. There's going to be more injuries. I think he'll find a spot. But are you surprised the market is small and he's still not on a team yet?
I'm not necessarily surprised because given when Carolina decided to let him go, it was a game of musical chairs. So you see Phillip Rivers signing with the Indianapolis Colts. You see Tom Brady going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You see Teddy Bridgewater going to the Carolina Panthers. So it's not surprising because when you look at a Cam Newton, he's taken a decline ever since the MVP season in which they went to the Super Bowl back in 2015. He's only had three seasons of 60% completion or above passing. And in today's game, it's all about precision passing. It's all about quick game. It's all about getting the ball out of your hands very quickly, spread offense, things like that. So Cam Newton has taken a decline over the last couple of years. That's number one. Number two, when you factor in Cam Newton is a superstar. He's a polarizing figure, figuratively and literally. And that's going to be very difficult for a guy who was a JUCO national champion, who was a college NCAA national champion, number one overall pick, has been starting ever since he got drafted to the Carolina Panthers, been in the league 9 years, a former NFL MVP. It's going to be very difficult for him to accept a backup role in this league. And I think the teams are very cognizant of that. And they're probably a little skittish of actually having someone that polarizing being the most famous person on the team, albeit he's a backup right, holding a clipboard and a headset every Sunday afternoon.
So this will be a year in which we have a chance to see Joe Burrow, Tua, and Justin Herbert all start at some point in the year. Now, I think Burrow probably starts week one. Go back to your playing days. When you faced a rookie quarterback, what were the tricks that you couldn't get away with a Breeze or, you know, a veteran quarterback? What are the tricks a guy like you, a high-end defensive back, used on rookie quarterbacks?
Oh, wow. One that comes to mind was Sam Bradford back in 2010. It was he was with the St. Louis Rams at the time, tried to try me on a 9 route, and I intercepted it early fourth quarter. We wound up winning the game. And the thing is that with most young quarterbacks in this league, you got to find a way to trick them, disguise things like that, because they have not been around. They have not been able to see everything that Drew Brees, Tom Brady, guys like that have been accustomed to for so many years. So I think that's the main thing. The main component is pressure them and also confuse them, disguise your coverages, throw in a few exotic blitzes. And most of the time, unless it's like an Andrew Luck type of rookie, most of the time, they're going to struggle because they simply have not seen that type of complex defense at the collegiate level.
You were a world-class track guy. You ran, if I recall, 4.27.40. It was the fastest.
My man.
Yes. You were a speed guy. So, and I've said this with joy, when I see pictures of receivers, corners, and quarterbacks, I think to myself, you can stay in shape right now. But I'm thinking about like units, like offensive line, and I think to myself, special teams could get really choppy this year. With your background in track and field, would the time off be beneficial? How good of shape could you kept yourself in not being in the facility? Or do you think this is a year where everybody's a little out of shape, everybody's going to get dinged up? How would you have handled it with your track background, with no OTAs and potentially an abridged camp?
Oh, I was actually just having a conversation with one of my friends who actually plays in the league still right now just the other day. And he was telling me that, Stan, everybody's going to be out of shape when they come back. And I'm not sure where I come out on that because given my track background, I think that for right now, with it being the quarantine and this pandemic and everyone now having to work out on their own, I think that with my knowledge of the sport, things like that, I would still be able to maintain a certain level of shape, but preparing for the game of football, the only way that you can truly get in football shape is to actually go through football practice, football games, whether it's a scrimmage, whether it's something like that in training camp. That's the only true way to match that level of intensity and that level of soreness that you're going to have the day after practice going to the next. That's the only way that you're going to be able to attain that and match that in the NFL is actually going through it.
Stanford Rout joining us. Would you be comfortable going to camp knowing you could catch COVID? Would it bother you?
I'm a germaphobe, and I'm OCD. I'll tell you that right now, Colin. So it would definitely be an uphill battle, but I love this game. I've always loved it ever since I was a kid. So I would find a way to navigate through this tough time to still be able to play this game that I know and love so well. But I definitely do want to know the parameters. I want to know the precautionary measures that Roger Goodell and the league is going to have in place whenever the players come back for training camp.
You look good. You look happy. So you're handling the COVID thing fine. What are you doing right now? Where are you staying? How are you doing? How's your family doing?
Oh, everybody's doing good. We're just quarantining, making sure that we are all just trying to stay away from this virus. Like I said, I'm a germaphobe. I'm OCD. A lot of people in my family are, so I think that's where I get it from. And just trying to stay positive, stay healthy. I've upped my juicing, so I'm doing my best to try to be as healthy as I can. Whenever I go work out, I make sure to have on layers. That way I'm actually sweating even more because I've heard that heat is actually something that is a deterrent for COVID-19. Not sure how true that is, but that's just the things that I've been hearing. So, yeah, I'm definitely in good spirits right now. Just doing this thing whenever I can, the broadcasting, making sure that I'm staying up on top of that. So all in all, everything is going well. Hope you the same, Colin.
Yeah. One more question I was thinking about. So the Raiders are going from Oakland to Vegas. And fans don't care. But let's say I've got two kids in school and my wife has a social network. And all of a sudden I got to move to a new city. We looked up a number about a month ago, and teams that move are never good the first year. It's a mess. I was in Vegas this weekend. I flew by the stadium and I drove by the stadium, and I'm thinking the idea that I'd have everybody on that team has to move their entire family to Vegas. It's probably good for Vegas home sales with all new these pro athletes. When you went from Oakland to Houston, Kansas City, take my audience into being a pro athlete. Hey guys, ooh, we've all got to move. How is it ever disruptive to your game?
Luckily, whenever I moved from Oakland to Kansas City, that was during the offseason, so I had a chance to go ahead and acclimate myself. So that wasn't as big of a hurdle. But whenever you're actually moving a team from one place to the next, now it's only one state over, California to Nevada. I mean, good Lord, I could imagine how it was when St. Louis moved to Los Angeles, the Rams. It is something that definitely takes a lot of support from your family, teammates, things like that, because you're going from one city to the next. You're going from one team to the next. You got to actually learn a different culture, maybe from one that you've actually been accustomed to. So it definitely has some growing pains. But I think that if you have the right people around you, that's going to actually lessen the effect of those growing pains actually transferring over to the field into your body of work.
Stanford Rout, 8 NFL seasons. Good seeing you. Look healthy and happy. Good seeing you, buddy.